Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, my people, and welcome to our first primetime show. This is Splash, and my pond is open. We have a great show for you tonight. So much to cover, so little time. The number to call is 215-383-5730, and I encourage you to jump right in. Wade carefully if you must, but remember, in my pond, everybody swims at their own risk. We'll be here for the next hour doing the thing I love to do most, talking smack about politics. We now have a blog, so go to our show. So all of our shows are posted there, past, present, and future. You can go to 1111broadcasting.com. That's the numerals, 1111broadcasting.com, and you can listen to a show, make a comment and suggestion, or just say hi. You can also follow me on Facebook at 1111broadcasting. The Facebook page is new, so I need friends. If you missed a show, don't sweat it. The show links are listed on my blog, so just go to 1111broadcasting.com and listen to your heart's content. You can jump right into the show chat room tonight. You'll need a free login from Blog Talk Radio. It takes less than a minute. You just put in your email address, pick a screen name, a password, and voila! You can jump right into the chat room, pick on people, pick on me, or just say hi. Of course, you don't need to create an account to call. Just dial the number right there at the top of your show page, 215-383-5730. I would love to talk to you. Put me to the test. It'll be your time to shine. Last week, we talked about all the presidential candidates for 2016, and there are many, from nut jobs to serious contenders. I also made a few observations about the tragedy of the Islamic terror attacks in France. I'm surprised that Obama and Biden, or at least John Kerry, didn't go, and I'm really surprised at John Kerry's almost flippant comments about our absence. We also had just a few minutes at the end of the show to talk about gas prices. Gas here just dipped below $2 a gallon for the first time in decades here in Florida. I tried to touch on some of the pitfalls of a $2 per gallon drop in gas prices, but ran out of time, so we may revisit that. Actually, we'll probably do that first. But tonight, we're going to talk about political whining. Phil Graham said way back when Mitt Romney was running for president, we have become sort of a nation of whiners. Although he was talking about Smurfs harping on the decline of America, was he right? Are we a nation of whiners? Is whining effective? Why do politicians whine so much? And what does it get them? We'll talk about that. As all of this and your phone calls coming up. But first, let's surf the news. And a lot of good things going on today in the world. Representative Paul Ryan, a Republican Wisconsin, we all know him. He won't run for president in 2016. I don't think that's a big surprise. NBC was reporting that. He said that he decided that he's not going to run for president in 2016, and he's decided that weeks ago. Okay. It is amazing that the amount of encouragement I got from people, from friends and supporters, but I feel like I am in the right position to make a big difference where I am, and I want to do that. That's Ryan on his not running for president in 2016. Washington AP, in a rare public admission of error, the White House said Monday the U.S. should have sent a high-level official to the anti-terror march in Paris that was attended by more than 40 world leaders. The Obama administration was represented Sunday by the U.S. ambassador to France, though Attorney General Eric Holder was in Paris for security meetings. It's fair to say we should have sent someone with a higher profile, White House spokesperson Josh Earnest said. Secretary of State Kerry was on a long-planned trip to India on Sunday, but now will visit France later this week. That's my understanding. The White House is sending Kerry to Paris. He's going to march the same route all by himself, claiming that he got the date mixed up. We'll see how that goes for him. I don't think France is going to be too happy with that with that consolation prize. Anyway, it is officially duck season in the state of Texas tonight as Ohio State Buckeyes take on the Oregon Ducks for the national championship in the first ever college football playoffs. In Indonesia, the divers retrieved one black box Monday and located the other from Air Asia plane that crashed more than 2 weeks ago, a key development that will help investigators unravel what caused the aircraft to plummet into the Java Sea. You know, I saw the picture, and the black box, it's actually orange. Maybe that's why it took them so long to find it. Maybe that's why they never found the Malaysia airliner black boxes that went down. Looking for the wrong color. In Washington, the AP reports that President Barack Obama wants Congress to pass legislation requiring companies to inform customers within 30 days if their data has been hacked, a move that follows high-profile breaches at retailers including Target, Home Depot, and Neiman Marcus. A White House official said Obama will announce the proposed legislation on Monday, along with a measure aimed at preventing companies from selling student data to third parties and from using information collected in school to engage in targeting advertising. Now tell me, what does one of those things have to do with the other? And is it any wonder why the average schmo can't figure out who stands for what in D.C. when we mix laws together like that as one proposal? A group of Democrats in the U.S. Senate came out against a rule Monday that blocks Congress from shifting Social Security funds to prevent a cut in disability insurance next year. House approved last week a rule saying the lower chamber can't consider legislation that would reallocate funds from Social Security's retirement insurance program to shore up its smaller disability insurance program. The Social Security Administration actuaries say that the latter program will run out of money next year, and the income payroll taxes will only be able to cover 80% of the scheduled benefits. And that's typically what they've been doing, as there was a surplus in the retirement trust fund, was transferring funds from one to the other as needed, because the disability trust fund is far less solvent than the retirement trust fund. But hey, so find another way to pay for it. Duh. Why rob the retirement trust fund and put it in more jeopardy as well, especially with all the baby boomers retiring? Anyway, Ted Cruz, longtime foe of NASA and science, will oversee NASA and science in the new Congress. How about a little oil to go with that water? Anyway, falling oil prices dragged stock market lower on Monday as ExxonMobil, Chevron, and other big energy companies sank along with crude. The steep drop in oil prices over recent months has investors second-guessing expectations for the quarterly earnings this season that starts this week. Oil sunk to $47.43 a barrel. That, to me, that's awesome. Stock tip: wait to buy cheap oil stocks until you see oil fall below $40 a gallon. $40 a barrel, maybe even $35, unless you have money to burn, of course. The Dow slipped nearly 100 points on the back of sliding oil prices, and the NASDAQ dropped nearly 40 points, the S&P a little more than 16 points. Anyway, that is just some of what happened today. If you want to talk about any of that, jump right in at 215-383-5730. The number to call again, 215-383-5730. Now, before we whine about political whining, let me tell you about Choice Mattress and Furniture. When it comes to mattresses and bedding, David Ritter and the staff at Choice Mattress and Furniture know their stuff. I took my family to Choice Mattress, and everything was considered, from the weight of each family member, our age, or the way we even each of us slept. The right mattress was personally selected for each of us. Now my whole family sleeps in great comfort all night long on beds from Choice Mattress, and yours can too. Every mattress carried by Choice Mattress comes with a 5, 10, or even 15-year 100% full replacement warranty, not a prorated limited warranty like other stores. Chances are that if you bought a bed in the Daytona Beach area in the last 20 years and you bought it from David, With over 20 years of experience, David knows beds, and you should see all the other fine lines of furniture Choice Mattress has for every room in your house. Go see David and the fine folks at Choice Mattress and Furniture. Tell them Splash sent you. They're located on the corner of LPG and Nova Road, 1501 North Nova Road in Holly Hill. If you just have questions, David's always happy to answer them. Give him a call at 386-226-BEDS. That's 386-226-2337. Choice Mattress, simply the best choice that you can make in your sleep. Actually, before we talk about political whining, let's talk oil. The number to call, 215-383-2570. That's 215-383-5730. And I started to talk about, I touched on this last Friday show, but ran out of time. But I am so excited about it that I really want to give this the attention that it deserves. The crude prices, they've been dropping for months. It seems like even longer, although they were taking an express train through a bottomless pit. There are multiple reasons for the plummet, and Daily Finance was reporting on this. And of course, there's a bottom somewhere, but your guess is as good as anybody else's. Gas at the pump is cheap, cheaper than it's been in years, which makes consumers like myself very happy. It should make a lot of people very happy. I mean, that just drops the price of so many things. There are many other potential implications of the slide, and not all of them are so cheery. And that's what I wanted to talk about last Friday, but we ran out of time. Higher gas prices. Yes, gas prices have dropped sharply, but don't assume they'll necessarily stay that way. Of course, gas prices have come down, they've gone up, they've come down, they've gone up. But the longer they're down, the better it is for all of us. And the more they go down, the longer it'll take for them to get back up to where they were. Lower costs for consumers have made some lawmakers eye higher taxes, however. According to Reuters, that includes Democrats and Republicans, although federal officials are worried about increasing gas prices for fear of angering voters, there's this thought that as things get better at the gas stations, people might not notice if they slip a little bit of extra in there for the government coffers. So expect states to consider whether they can fill their government coffers. According to the Mercury, Pennsylvania already did with a recent hike in gas taxes, although they've been in the works for a while, so they've always been concerned. I think every municipality has considered a hike in gas taxes. I know that the federal government has hinted at and talked about a hike in federal gas taxes, especially with the funds for the highway, the Department of Transportation, starting to dwindle. So be on your guard for your municipality, your state, and of course the federal government to think they might be able to pull a fast one on us while the prices are low. The prices will go back up, and the increased gas tax will not go away. Now, some housing prices could drop. Daily Finance is reporting oil is a big source of private, not just public, income in some parts of the country. Prior to the global price drop, times were good and the money was rolling in. If prices stay low for an extended period of time, that will hit the wealth of many and potentially cause a decline in home values in areas with a high concentration of energy jobs especially. That's according to Fortune magazine. Such a decline would take until the late 2015 or sometime into 2016 to become obvious. In other words, it'll sneak up on us. But it would be a blow to the chance of regaining real estate values after the Great Recession in those areas. Now, you got to remember, not everywhere. They're talking about, you know, areas where energy is a primary source of industry. That's probably encompasses about anywhere from 7 to 10 states. Here's another thing that's not so cheery. Tar sand oil could take a beating. One reason pulling the oil out of tar sands in areas of Canada have been big business was the overall cost of oil. When oil is at $100 a barrel, companies can invest a lot and still make a tidy profit. But the technology and work needed requires oil prices of at least $65 to $75 a barrel. According to USA Today, long term, and in long term, the area areas that have been extracting oil from tar sands could hit a major local recession. Now, remember, oil prices were well above $75 when they were doing a lot of the investing part. So I don't know how much impact this will have as time moves on, but you know, time will tell. That's the cool thing about the economy is you never really know everything, every impact that there's going to be. And of course, there's always some unintended consequences, both good and bad. Keystone Pipeline, not so sure. The Keystone Pipeline already a point of contention between the Republican Congress and President Obama, has been touted as a job creator. There's room for debate as to the number and duration of those jobs, but what isn't in question is why the pipeline would be built to carry tar sand oil from Canada to ports in the southern U.S. If the tar sand oil is too expensive to produce over the long period, what good would the pipeline do? Very good point. However, as we all know, just like we're talking about earlier, the price of oil and the price of gasoline is going to go back up. It's just a matter of time. It's not a question of if, it's a question of when. So if we build that pipeline now, we'll have it then. That's all I'm saying. We need the jobs to build the pipeline anyway, whether they're temporary, whether they're 1 year or 2 years, we've got Americans that could use those jobs right now. Many countries would be hurt by the plummeting price of oil. And this is something that I took a liking to, actually, even though it's painted as not so cheery. You can talk about the Middle East, Russia, or parts of Africa or South America. Oil is important business. The flow of crude helps keep the flow of government revenue coming in. But as the BBC has reported, data from Deutsche Bank and the International Monetary Fund shows that 11 countries depend on particular crude prices to balance their budgets. That ranges from a low of $77 for Qatar, the richest nation in the world, to $184 a barrel in Libya, which has a lot of rebuilding left after the recent civil war. Russia, which has seen the value of the ruble take a nosedive, needs $105 a barrel to balance their budget, and Venezuela must have $118 a barrel to keep their lights on and their voters happy. There was a reason why they liked Chavez, and it wasn't Chavez. Economic problems in so many places could become a major destabilizing force in the world. Now, I got to tell you, folks, I didn't see a country on that list that I really gave two craps about. So, you know, if especially Russia, they need to be tamed, and if it has to be done economically, so be it. Libya, you know, they blew themselves apart. Nothing you can do there. Of course, the French helped with us leading from behind. And that's just the story and the way it is for people that put all their eggs in one basket. Stock prices face a challenge. For many investors, oil is a proxy for economic health. Prices drive up because there's more commerce. When they drop, it's the opposite. According to the Associated Press, low oil prices have already had an impact on the stock market. Now, if crude continues to be cheap, equity investing could turn ugly. Well, I mean, there's a lot of people that were saying that the stock market was overvalued anyway, right? Could that have been because of the energy boom? I wonder. I'm no economist, but I do know oil is going down and stocks are mixed, to say the least. It is a good day for fracking, of course. For all the bad news, those involved in hydraulic fracturing, otherwise known as fracking, will find themselves in a very strong position. Even as states like New York tried to end the practice, fracking is one of the reasons that oil prices are currently low, and as it has helped significantly increase the production, supply, and demand. All those with concerns about any possible links to unusual seismic activity or problems with groundwater may find that dollars trump ecology. It always does. Just follow the money, folks. Follow the money. Anyway, those were some things I wanted to talk about last Friday. Just didn't have the time. Ran out as I was rushing to the end of the show. But one thing I do want to point out, you know, if oil continues to go down, how will that impact us here in the United States? Because I do care about this country. That's for sure. And I don't know if we have to worry. I mean, unemployment in the oil, I mean, employment in the oil industry. We employ a lot of people in the oil industry. If things got so bad, if world prices came down so much, if OPEC could not control their smaller nations as they're claiming and count on them to cut production and drive the price of oil back up, if OPEC doesn't even have the impact that it used to have because they're not percentage-wise the producers of oil as they once were, they're not the king of oil anymore. I think they've been topped by us. And that may be that they don't have the impact. They can't just turn off the spigot and run prices back. What will we do here if the prices stay low and we do start to hit these local recessions in these 7 to 10 different states, and it starts to impact indirect jobs and bring stock prices down? You know what? I think can anybody say bailout? I mean, here we are, the auto industry impacted 2.5 million jobs. We bailed them out. Banking, we bailed bankers out because they were too big to fail. Here is the oil industry that impacts 9.833 million jobs in the United States. We're not talking about globally. We're talking about here in the United States, directly and indirectly impacts almost 10 million jobs. That is 5.6% of the U.S. total in jobs. Everyone was, there were some complainers, some whiners about bailing out the auto industry, and there were some whiners about bailing out banks. And I'm sure there would be some whiners about bailing out the oil industry. But are they too big to let fail? I wonder. Maybe the government will decide to give money to the big companies like Exxon and Chevron and let it trickle down to the smaller oil companies. I'm pretty sure it wouldn't work the same way as it did with banks, but you could assign somebody like Elizabeth Warren to oversee the OARP and find out that we can't follow that money either. In any case, it's a big industry, and if things go that way for so long, we're going to wonder what we're going to do after a while. So, can you say bailout? Anyone? Anyone? What you gonna do? Now, if you want to give us a call, talk about oil, the number to call, 215-383-5730. We'd love to talk to you. And I'm going to get into whining, political whining, as I had promised. But first, I want you to remember that when it comes to mattresses and bedding, David Ritter and his staff at Choice Mattress and Furniture know their stuff. My whole family is now sleeping in beds from Choice Mattress, and you cannot say enough about the benefits of a great night's sleep on the right mattress just for you. Every mattress carried by Choice Mattress comes with a 5, 10, or even 15-year 100% full replacement warranty, not a prorated limited warranty like other stores. With over 20 years of experience, David knows beds, and you can check out all the other fine lines of furniture Choice Mattress has for every room in your home. You make sure you tell David and his staff that Splash sent you. Go see them at Choice Mattress and Furniture, located on the corner of LPGA and Nova Road, 1501 North Nova Road in Holly Hill. If you just have questions, David is always happy to answer them. Give him a call, 386-226-BEDS. That's 386-226-2337. Choice Mattress, simply the best choice that you can make in your sleep. Political whining happens all the time, seems to happen more and more and more. But there were some people that just made political whining absolutely famous. Some of my favorites, and I'm sure you have some of yours and some that I can't even recall. But my favorite over the years has been, "It's all Bush's fault." You can quote just about any Smurf that you want. You've heard him say it at one point or another. Bush, 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 Marsha, Marsha, Marsha. Here's another one of my favorites. It's all Obama's fault. That's, of course, the Elmos in general. Everything that goes wrong can be somehow linked in one way or another to Barack Obama. Of course, one of my favorite one-liners: "We weren't just broke, We were in debt. That's Hillary Clinton upon her about her finances as she and Bill left the White House. Of course, my favorite wine. Some people don't even recognize it as whining. The party of no. You are the party of no, which, I have used myself. Both parties in general use that one. Of course, my favorite from Barack Obama. But we won. We were the winners. We're supposed to get our way. Not in America, my friend. Not in America. So, anyway, both parties have done it. Will continue to do it. What do they get out of it? That's an interesting thing to know. I look back in my extensive archives of articles that I've saved over the years, and here was an interesting one I found by Joe Peyronin. This was out of Huffington Post, by the way. Stop whining, Republicans. President Barack Obama handily won a second term largely because he ran a superior campaign. Republicans expected a late Reagan-esque surge to propel Mitt Romney to victory. This made Tuesday's defeat an even more crushing blow. Now, this, of course, is right after the elections in 2012, as you can tell. As Romney was conceding defeat, already indignant Republicans were pointing fingers and assessing blame. They were incessantly, intensely angry, overwrought, and consumed with personal animus for the president. Highly paid Republican consultants cried foul. After all, consultants must protect their reputation and future income. And as you listen to this article, I want you to listen to how similar it is to the Smurfs right after this recent midterm tsunami that rolled over them. Republican strategist Mary Madeline blew a fuse and personally attacked President Obama in an article for the Conservative National Review. This is an amazing quote, folks. What happened? A political narcissistic psychopath leveraged fear and ignorance with a campaign marked by mendacity and malice rather than a mandate for resurgence and reform. Instead of using his high office to articulate a vision for our future, Obama used it as a vehicle for character assassination, replete with unrelenting and destructive distortion, derision, and division. You can't say that she was a little miffed, could you? Her hate and bitterness towards the president oozed through every word. To call him a psychopath is to call him a person whose behavior is often criminal and who lacks a sense of moral responsibility or social conscience. To me, folks, that's just the definition of a politician. Of course, this guy calls it outrageous because he's an Obama devotee. But just remember, folks, Obama did not say anything about Romney that his primary opponents hadn't said before the general election even started. Former House Speaker Newt Gingrich even called the governor a liar, right on CBS. Texas Governor Rick Perry told the National Journal, "There's something inherently wrong when getting rich off failure and sticking it to someone else is how you do your business. And I happen to think that that's indefensible." Well, they were all over Romney and his time at Bain Capital, primarily started by Rick Perry. Gingrich told the media last December if Governor Romney would like to give back all the money he's earned from bankrupting companies and laying off employees over his years, then I'd be glad to listen to them. So why they were so ticked off at Barack Obama is a little beyond me, because this is just what people do. It's sore losership, and it's just part of politics, and it's part of the political whining. And where does it get you? Maybe it makes you feel better. Maybe it sets the blame on somebody else so you don't lose significance. I guess there's a whole host of reasons why you might do it right after you lose. Of course, Rick Santorum told CBS News this morning he doesn't have a core. Speaking of Romney, he's been on both sides of almost every single issue in the past 10 years. Now, let's face facts, folks. People were just pointing out things that actually did happen, maybe not to the degree that they emphasized it. But all Obama did was say, thank you very much for those little truths. And that's the danger of a primary season when it gets too ugly. These were all GOP criticisms that Obama campaign simply echoed. But none of that stop the whining from beginning early Wednesday morning after the election results hit the headlines. Karl Rove, of course, was a big loser in this whole thing. He spent $365 million of donors' money. And he spoke of Obama's win, saying he succeeded by suppressing the vote, by saying to people, "You." And now, by the way, this was in a record turnout year for voters. And he was speaking to Fox News. Record turnout. He said that Obama succeeded in by suppressing the vote, by saying to people, "You may not like who I am, and I know you can't bring yourself to vote for me, but I'm going to paint this other guy as simply a rich guy," which he was, "who only cares about himself," which may or may not be true. But isn't that what they say of each other all the time in politics? Of course, in addition to Mary Madeline's vitriol, you also had Peter Morrison, the Hardin County, Texas Republican Party treasurer, blowing a gasket right on Facebook. He said, "We must contest every single inch of ground and delay the baby-murdering, tax-raising socialists at every opportunity. But in due time, the maggots," he said, "maggots, will have eaten every morsel of flesh off the rotting corpse of the Republic, and therein lies our opportunity." That opportunity to him, of course, was secession. "Why should Vermont," he went on, "and Texas live under the same government? Let each go her own way in peace." In peace? The last time secession was attempted, I seem to recall this little matter of a civil war. Would anyone argue if Texas succeeded today? I wonder if they succeeded today, if anyone would argue. Of course, I've written a little bit about secession, and in fact, blue separating from red, interesting thing to ponder. But of course, everyone hates to lose. Yes, the Republican Party, and this is a continuation of the article, went through a brutally divisive primary that nominated Mitt Romney, but Romney was gaining momentum while Obama remained vulnerable because of a weak economic recovery. And he was vulnerable. He was so beatable, folks. The Republicans blew it themselves. That's the only thing they got to worry about coming in 2016, is blowing it themselves. But Elmo's expectations way outpaced reality, and election night resulted in nearly a complete meltdown of the party. Now, listen, folks, I got to tell you, I myself predicted that the African-American community would not turn out the way they were expected, that the Latino community would not turn out the way that the Smurfs were expecting, and that the young people would not turn out in the numbers that the Smurfs were expecting. But they did. They did for once. And typically speaking, these three groups are very apathetic, but they weren't, because Obama ignited them. His personality ignited them. That is something that's going to be absent from 2016. Maybe. I mean, maybe they'll come up with another rock star. Elizabeth Warren is their only chance. They had of course, the Republicans had to do an internal autopsy and all of that. So, and decipher what exactly went wrong. There's been a lot of speculation that they're not changing their message. They're just repackaging it. Well, you know, and here comes 2014, and boom, they're right back in the driver's seat of Congress. Now, folks, this meltdown was not without recent precedent. Remember, Nancy Pelosi herself said when she was attempting to help the Democrats win the White House in 2004. "We don't need a plan. We just need to oppose George Bush." They were just as opposed to George Bush as the Republicans were opposed to Barack Obama. And that's just the way that it was. An entire radio network, Air America, was launched with the sole purpose of making GWB a one-term president. People like Jeannie Garofalo and Randy Rhodes spewed hatred for the Elmos and for George Bush specifically on FM stations all across the country. And soon after John Kerry went down in defeat, Air America soon after closed up shop. They had no purpose left except that which they set out to do in the first place, which was deride the sitting president. Such is the nature of political whining. But here we are 2 years later, with the Elmos now holding both chambers of Congress. And what happened 2 years after W won his second term? The same exact thing in reverse. The Democrats got themselves right back in the driver's seat, taking both houses, both chambers of commerce. Such is the nature of political whining. But look how this HuffPo article ended. I found this very interesting. President Barack Obama, his resounding victory, had exposed a core problem within the Republican Party. It is filled with anger and hatred brought on by an identity crisis. Republican leaders will be meeting over the next few weeks and months to determine what went wrong this election and what can be done to fix the problem. Isn't that what the Smurfs are doing right now? Perhaps a great first step would be to stop the whining. This is the HuffPo article. The whining and the ridiculous personal attacks, tantrums, and snitfits will not win over any converts. Nobody likes a sore loser. Oh, really? Did you hear the Smurfs after the 2004 election when George W. Bush won that one without needing any help in Florida? Have you heard them after this last midterm? I would submit to you that political whining is exactly why the Smurfs won both chambers in 2006, and it is exactly why the Elmos won both chambers in the electoral tsunami last November. So that is a benefit of political whining. It's exactly what Nancy Pelosi said. We don't need an alternative plan. We just need to oppose George Bush. That's the same thing that the Republicans have done incessantly over the last 6 years to Barack Obama. Isn't that true? That's absolutely true. It's exactly the way it happened. But you know what? I mean, there are some benefits to political whining, and I will touch base on that sometime throughout this conversation. If you want to talk about political whining, give me a call. The number is 215-383-5730. That's 215-383-5730. The Republicans, Elmos, as I call them, wanted to win the Senate, right? And they wanted to increase their margin in the House, which is exactly what they did. And they did it all through political whining. Every time Barack Obama turned around, they were whining about what it was that he was doing. So while the Republicans were moving to address their problems in their own lead up to the midterm elections, Democrats were trying to overcome problems of their own. There was big disputes and fights. Maybe you didn't see them because they weren't always out in the forefront or reported in the news, between the White House and the Senate Democrats over a relatively small sum of money that mushroomed into a major confrontation between House leadership between the Senate leadership, especially, and the White House. Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid and other Senate leaders pleaded with Obama to transfer millions in party funds and also help raise money for an outside group. We're never going to get on the same page, said David Crone, that's Reid's chief of staff, beating our heads up against the wall. So with that kind of and see, there's the difference. While the Republicans were politically whining about the Smurfs, the Democrats were politically whining about each other, also about the Smurfs. So everybody was whining about the Smurfs. That was a common core between the two sides, and something that you needed to really watch. From the onset of the campaign, Republicans had a simple plan: don't make mistakes and make it all about Obama, Obama, Obama. Every new White House crisis would bring a new Republican ad, which is political whining. and every Democratic incumbent would be attacked relentlessly for voting with the president 97% of the time, 98% of the time, 99% of the time. So you can't tell me political whining doesn't always have a positive result, because it certainly does and can and does. But none of that would work if the Republicans did not get the right candidates, a basic tenet that has eluded them in recent elections. This time, the party officials pushed bad candidates out. That would be the Tea Party folks, right? And did they win? They won once. Once. They sent Eric Cantor packing. That was it during the whole season. And then they had to recruit and coach contenders that had a much broader appeal. And they were very successful at doing that. Now, the Democrats began their 2004. Oh, and by the way, you would never know that they recruited better candidates, more broad appealing candidates, less Tea Party focused candidates, if you listen to Smurf whining, because everybody was a radical as far as they were concerned. But Democrats began the 2014 campaign with a big disadvantage. They had to defend 6 seats in 6 deeply Republican states, enough to lose the Senate, and a handful of others in swing states. And you heard them whine about their plight all the time. That kind of political whining, "Well, feel sorry for us, we're in such a hard position," never really helped. And then when they had the infighting between the White House and the Senate leadership over funding, it's easy to see what happened to the Smurfs in that election. Senate Democrats calculated that to win in red states, they also had to alter the midterm electorate. There's basically two Americas. They define two Americas. There's the midterm America, and there's the presidential year America. White House senior advisor Dan Pfeiffer said this, and they're almost apples and oranges. The question was, could Obama voters become Democratic voters? Now, it is such a lame excuse. Obama voters were Democrat voters. The question is, will they turn out when it matters? I mean, they voted for Obama to keep him in office. Why wouldn't you vote to give Obama the supporting cast? This is just like Michael Jordan when he didn't have any supporting players around him at the Chicago Bulls. Once he got Scottie Pippen, once he got, Horace Grant, and all those people around him that were great supporting cast, they won championships. This is the same exact thing. If the Democrats won't go out and vote for their respective Smurf politicians, then that's just the way it is. I mean, the voter turnout was the voter turnout. Another question, you can't tell me that Republican midterm voters are any different than Republican general election voters. Another question hung over the party as well. Could the White House and the Democrats on Capitol Hill work together? You know, the whole thing was supposed to be about, can the Republicans and the Democrats work together? They couldn't. But the Democrats can't work with the Democrats either. We're starting to see where the real problems could lie in the advancement of the people's business. Obama told his team that his number one political goal was to keep the Senate under Democrat control. He was very focused on that, said a senior White House official. Well, not according to Senator Harry Reid, but what the White House saw as deference and support, the Senate Democrats viewed as lip service, in the words of Crone. And he whined about it incessantly. Not about the Republicans. He whined about the Smurfs, his fellow Smurfs. 2 days before the midterm election, Crone sat in a mahogany conference table in the majority leader's stately suite just off the Senate floor and shared with the Washington Post reporters his notes of White House meetings. Reid's top aides wanted to show just how difficult he thought it had been to work with the White House, whining to a major news outlet that isn't always that friendly to the White House. Not a real good idea, wouldn't you say? Anyway, the disagreements underscored long-held contentions on Capitol Hill that Obama's political operation functioned purely for the president's benefit and not for his party's. That's a real problem, folks. So the Smurfs, what did they do? They didn't think that the political team at the White House truly was up to speed and up to par doing what they needed to get done. Crone said that the White House likes to cast aspiration and point fingers at us. No member of the Democratic caucus screwed up the rollout of the healthcare website, Crone said, yet they paid the price. Every one of them paid the price. Exacerbating matters was Obama's October 2nd speech in Chicago, in which he handed every Republican ad maker fresh material. And man, this is what did it. This was the nail in the coffin. Obama said, "I am not on the ballot this fall, but make no mistake, these policies are on the ballot, every single one of them." So while Democrats were trying to distance themselves from the president said, "Tough cookies, I'm jumping right in your back pocket." And that's what really cost them in a major way. And it took, said a senior Democratic official, about 12 seconds for every reporter, every race, half of the Obama world to say that that was probably not the right thing to say. Even Democrats, you could hear them groan in unison as they heard what the president said. It was so problematic that the Democrats wondered whether Obama even meant to say it. It's amazing that it was in his speech, they said. It wasn't an ad lib, and it wasn't. He truly believed it. He thought that this was all about him. It was just the kind of unforced error that the Republicans' leaders had worked on all year to avoid, and they avoided it, but Obama didn't. So the Smurfs benched their president, and with him basically on the bench, they had to call from the dugout. They had to call from their own bench Hillary Clinton. She made 45 events across the country. Bill Clinton and Tina Flournoy, they all had to come off the bench to help, and it wasn't enough. All year long, though, the Koch brothers were targets for the liberals. Reid drew attention to the brothers in March when he denounced them by name on the Senate floor. What is un-American is when shadowy billionaires pour unlimited money into Democrats, into democracy to rig the system. Listen, folks, there are billionaires on both sides of this argument buying this government. So for one to say that one side does it and the other side doesn't is just absolutely ludicrous. Demonizing millionaires was the way to go. It was the They called it their winning strategy. I'm telling you, it was their whining strategy. And what it basically said was, as Smurfs ratcheted up that strategy, it meant that all of their other whining was not getting traction. Everything that they were saying about the Republicans being the problem was not getting traction. That they were the obstacle, that they were the party of no. None of that was getting traction when they had to jump outside the box and all over the Koch brothers and single them out as the only millionaires and billionaires that were donating money to political operatives. So, of course, the Smurfs this last midterm seemed to do a whole lot more whining about each other and joined the Elmos in whining about their president. And all the Elmos had to do was keep their whining simple. It's all about Obama. That is the way we win. That was their mantra. Unfortunately for the Smurfs, Obama was sitting in the Oval Office with barely 40% approval rating, and the Koch brothers were not. And that's why the whining for the Republicans was so successful, and the political whining by the Smurfs and the Democrats was so unsuccessful. So anyway, you want to talk about that, the number to call is 215-383-5730, 215-383-5730. But it doesn't stop there. You know, the whining continues. And Obama's whining petulant. He's a lame duck now. What else is he going to do? Here's your prescription for whining, folks. In Obama's deeply partisan world, there aren't two sides to a legitimate policy issue that now divides Congress. There is only one side, his side, and anyone who opposes him and his party is doing so solely for political gain. And this is true of the Elmos, too, when they believe that their way is the only way. But for the next 2 years, we will be hearing from this president himself his whining through executive order and through the veto. And you're going to see a lot of that, hopefully more of the veto than of the executive order, but we're going to see both from Obama. It'll be interesting to see which ones the Elmos focus on. That'll be the Big O's whining lame duck message for the next 2 years, which he delayed until after the midterm tsunami. Remember delaying his executive order with regards to immigration. But now that the electorate has failed to show him the love, He will have to have it his way, and he will do this through his political whining, through the executive orders, and through the veto. That's all he has left. Those are his tools with which to whine. But that's the way it goes, and this is what happens when you give a president a little more, what's the word he is? Oh yeah, flexibility. He doesn't have to worry about being elected anymore, and clearly, according to the Smurfs, he only cares about himself and not his party. So now the Elmos will be doing some whining of their own. The question is, what kind of whining will it be? Will they politically whine that all of their efforts to stop the president's executive temper tantrums were ineffective and fell victim to his veto pen? Or will they whine that they actually passed legislation through both chambers of Congress and the president continually threw himself down on the floor, arms and legs flailing like a child screaming, no, 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 no. But Obama faces huge challenges with his sophomore complaint. A growing number of Americans no longer believe that he can deliver on his promises, and with good reason. Take family incomes. They've fallen from $55,600 in 2007 to $51,000 today. So the gap between families at the top and the bottom has widened. About one-third of Americans have debts that were sent to collection firms, according to a new report by the Urban Institute and Encore Capital Groups. It's a stunning number, and it threads through nearly all communities. It was also reported that that home ownership fell to a new low in the last year, as shrinking incomes and tighter finances forced more Americans into rentals. That's the lowest U.S. home ownership level since 1995. And I'm going to tell you, folks, I used to see in my area a lot of signs for rent, for rent, for rent. Those have all been pulled out of the yard. They're not so much for rent anymore. Those are being gobbled up by people that are not buying homes. Even with interest rates as low as they have ever been, people are not buying homes in the same at the same level that they once were. Yet in a speech at the Democratic fundraiser Obama was boasting with a straight face, there's almost no economic measure by which we are not better off now than we were when I took office. This was before the midterms, you have to remember, right? Another foot in the mouth. I mean, it was just like that. It just simply isn't true. There are so many areas where the average American is still suffering. So to say something like that and then follow it up with the reason you don't feel it, you just don't feel it. It boggled my mind. I couldn't even believe he said it. A hefty majority of Americans know better. As Gallick said last week, 57% of Americans now say the economy is getting worse. When Republicans gave it an immediate thumbs and we're talking about now, of course, Obama whined about a litany of long-ignored proposals that he sent to Congress, especially his widely discredited idea of raising the minimum wage. When Republicans gave it the immediate thumbs down, saying his proposal was dead on arrival because it was a job killer, the White House accused them, saying, and that would be whining, the GOP of playing politics with the issue. Oh, please. Like Obama doesn't play politics with this issue of the minimum wage. Let's give America a raise. That's not politics, please. Does Obama ever mention the CBO's report that estimates that raising the minimum wage to $10.10 an hour would eliminate 500,000 and possibly as many as 1 million jobs once it's fully implemented? Most of those would be lower wage jobs, too. So there's one way to raise the average wages of Americans is simply cause lower wage people to lose their jobs. Unlike Bill Clinton, Obama is having a very difficult time accepting divided government, the people that the people gave him. That is the way we the people wanted it. If we didn't, then the 2010 would not have happened, where he lost the House, or we would have given it back to him in 2012, right? If we wanted him to have the House back when he was reelected. But even though he was reelected, he didn't have the coattails to get his House back. And 2014 certainly wouldn't have happened if the people themselves did not want a divided government. Obama is whining because he can't have his way, but also because he fervently believes that government is the solution to all of our problems, and he just cannot understand why we the people cannot see that. Congress is divided. And it's often been throughout our history because American Electric is deeply divided and becoming more so. That's a fact. Has government worked to divide us even more deeply? Indeed, they have. But that is besides the point. The people clipped this lame duck president's wings by taking away both the House and the Senate, clipped them severely, and did so for their own reasons, all of which had to do with every one of Obama's policies being on the ballot last November. So, that's just the way it works, folks. And political whining, if it's done properly, can yield political benefits. Political whining done improperly, especially infighting inside your own party against your own self, can have detrimental consequences against the desired result. So, in any case, as a final word on the subject, political whining is not necessarily a bad thing. In fact, there's been so much political whining over the last, 4 years, not as much prior to, at least not as much political whining that was heard in the first 2 years of Obama because he had such a power advantage in Congress in those first 2 years. But definitely over the last 4 years has been so much political whining that not a whole lot has gotten done. And you know me, folks, if you've listened to me for any length of time, I'm a big fan of gridlock. Because if the government can't do anything, then they can't do anything to me. And it seems like every time they turn around and do something, case in point, the unaffordable I Don't Care About You Act, where I ended up with only one choice of insurance, that from my employer, who was forced to give it to me through the business mandate and gave me the cheapest, most horrible piece of junk you could possibly imagine. When you ask for minimum requirements, guess what you get? That's right, minimum requirements. There was a much better way to do that, but because government forced it on us at a time where we clearly said through every poll imaginable that we did not want it, they decided anyway that they were going to screw it up for 83% of the people so that another 3% could become insured. That is absolutely ludicrous. That's temper tantrum, and that's another form of political whining that actually really hurts, doesn't it? But for the most part, the political whining did derail the Obama Express, which was a badly needed thing for this country. And if all goes well and good, and the Republicans do the correct political whining, meaning they pass legislation through both houses, both chambers of Congress, and send it to the president's desk, whether he vetoes it or not, and show who the real obstructionist to the people's business is, then they have great chances in 2016. And if they just continually allow themselves to be distracted by all the little things that Obama does through his executive power and through his rules creation, and they try and bog themselves down like that, the people will not see the message of who the actual obstructionist to the people's business is. He is sitting in the White House, and his job between now and 2016 is to take our eye off that ball. And I've never thought that an election mattered as much as I do in 2016. I didn't think it really mattered a whole lot who became president in 2008. I really didn't care which one became president in 2012. But the bottom line was, it really matters now. If you're going to start pulling up the tracks of the Obama Express so it never leaves the station again, you're going to have a Republican win, an Elmo win in 2016. If not, that's it. It's here to stay. It's going to weave itself right into the fabric of society. Well, that's a wrap for tonight's show. My pond will reopen tomorrow night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and every night after that, Monday through Friday at 8 p.m. I hope you'll join us. Check out the website to see what's up, 1111broadcasting.com. That's the numerals, 1111broadcasting.com. And until we meet again, by all means, do what you love and love what you do. Good night, everybody.